You're listening to the Do Gooders podcast. It's human nature to believe in something other than oneself, and doing so can give life meaning. That according to Dr. Diane Winston, who has made understanding, analyzing, and writing about religion in America her career. Now as the Knight Chair in Media and Religion at the University of Southern California, Diane is a national authority on religion and the media as both a journalist and scholar. Her courses examine religion, spirituality, and ethics in relationship to journalism, entertainment media, American history, and foreign policy. And in full disclosure, Diane was my own thesis advisor during my time in graduate school at USC. Diane holds a doctorate in religion from Princeton University, along with master's degrees from Harvard Divinity School, the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, and Brandeis University. As she explains on today's show, religion, like politics, economics, race, ethnicity, and gender, is a cultural factor and a social force that motivates, explains, and inspires. It's key to understanding the world we live in. And you can't have religion without spirituality and vice versa. So allow me to introduce to you today, to share her expertise on the topic, Dr. Diane Winston.
You're listening to the Do Gooders podcast, a show from the Salvation Army's Caring Magazine, where we firmly believe that good starts with you. We get it. Life is busy, and we know you want to do good, but squeezing another thing into the to-do list is hard. Idea organizer, truth seeker, and good infuser Kristen Thieme will introduce you to people just like you who are doing good right where they are, so you can be inspired to make your world a better, brighter place. Listen in on honest conversations for actions you can take to do good today. Here's your host, Caring Magazine editor, Kristen Thieme.
The Salvation Army fights for good in every zip code, finding unique ways to meet need. See what's happening in your community and how you can join in at westernusa.salvationarmy.org. That's westernusa.salvationarmy.org.
Dr. Winston, thank you so much for being on the Do Gooders podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be with you today.
So as a professor at USC, a lot of your classes in the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism center largely on religion and the relationship between spirituality and ethics and journalism. How did you come into this field of study, and why does religion interest you?
I have always been interested in religion, and after I finished up my bachelor's degree, I went to Harvard Divinity School simply because I wanted to learn more about religion. I had grown up in a secular family, and I felt it was a big hole in my knowledge because I knew about my religion, but I didn't know very much about the role of religion in America. And I just fell in love with studying religion when I was at Harvard, and I went on to become a reporter where I could cover religion. That was my beat. And then after doing that for a while, I thought I'd like to go deeper, so I went and got a doctorate in religion. And it was American religious history, specifically 19th and 20th century evangelicalism, and I wrote my dissertation on the Salvation Army. So I have had this interest for a long time now, and part of that interest is in educating other people, whether it's through journalism or through scholarship or through teaching, about how important it is to understand the role of religion in society.
Absolutely. And one of your courses, specifically titled Hollywood, Faith, and Media, looks at how television narratives incorporate religion today. So what has surprised you about the representation of spirituality in Hollywood?
Well, ever since the rise of digitization and the explosion of streaming, there's been a lot more attention to religion and spirituality than there had been before in Hollywood. And I think that's because when there was a shortage of TV stations, everyone wanted to play it safe and not go too far out on a limb and make anything, you know, too weird or too sectarian about religion. And I'm speaking now of scripted dramas, just scripted dramas. But with the advent of cable and streaming and the rise of niche audiences, you could really program people who are interested in religion. So for people who are sort of intrigued by what you might call a cult, there have been shows like The Path or for people who are more interested in the work of religion in society. Don't laugh, but there's Game of Thrones, where the creators have at least 7 different kinds of religions that all play a very important role in not only politics, but social life. So there's been a lot of different kinds of niche shows where people are free to talk about religious and spiritual concerns. And there's always a string of supernatural shows where you know, everything from, you know, witchcraft to zombies to vampires are part of the scene. And those are kind of spirituality, too. So just amazing, because there's even a wider range of shows now that look at some people's lives. I think Breaking Bad is a great example of that. And you wouldn't say Breaking Bad was a religious show, but it is a show that really looks at, you know, at what point does a person become bad, and why does a person become bad, and is bad really bad when, you know, you're trying to help your family? So yes, I think there's so much that one could excavate when one looks at how religion and spirituality and ethics are portrayed in television.
So through your role as the night chair in media and religion, you also track religion's role in the media specifically. What would you say is that role today, and how have you seen it change since your time as a religion reporter?
The role of religion in the media has changed not at all, but also tremendously since I was a reporter in the 80s and 90s.
Interesting.
And what I mean by that is back when I was originally reporting, there was every paper had at least 1 or 2 religion reporters, and television stations had religion reporters. And the religion beat was recognized as important as education or, you know, health and welfare or politics. I mean, religion was the thing that people covered. After the crisis in the news business, religion reporters were among the first to go at many news outlets, because editors decided that people were not interested in those stories or someone else could handle them. So on the one hand, there are a lot fewer religion reporters who are working full-time at news outlets. However, it's at legacy news outlets. I think the New York Times and the Washington Post are among the few newspapers that have at least two religion reporters on staff. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are so many more opportunities, if you don't care about a regular salary and benefits, for writers who want to write about religion. And that's because the web has opened up so many new places to publish. And so I've heard it various times that BuzzFeed or Daily Beast or Fox has someone working on religion. Whether or not it's true, I don't know, but I've heard that they're interested in it. The Atlantic has been doing more about religion. So it's just something that if you are a good writer or reporter and you want to write in this field, there are just a number of outlets that are news outlets you can write for, but there's also outlets that are more geared towards people who are interested in religion as religion. And I'm thinking here of The Revealer or Killing the Buddhist or On Faith or I think BeliefNet even. Mm-hmm. So there are so many opportunities that didn't exist when I was a reporter that if you have the expertise, you can really develop a career in writing about religion.
Interesting. So there seems to be a distinction between the terms religion and spirituality. How would you define that difference? And have you seen this difference among your teaching, among your own writing, in the publications that you follow? What would you say about that?
The difference between religion and spirituality is fascinating, because truthfully, you can't have one without the other. Conventionally, we think of spirituality as something which is private, which is maybe eclectic, is non-denominational, it falls outside of institutions. Whereas we think of religion as the institutional expression, belief in faith, and we think of religion as public and with tenets or doctrines or credos. And so people say, well, I don't like religion because, you know, a bureaucracy or its institution or its rules, but I love spirituality because freedom and it's me. The truth is most religions began spirituality. I mean, most religions began with someone having a revelation, which is what spirituality is about. Mm-hmm. And then that person or others tried to codify what happened into a system where other people could experience the same thing. So the heart of most religions is spirituality, because it is about that illumination or the insight or the oneness that comes when each individual perceives God, the ultimate, whatever you want to call it. So you can't have a religion, I think, without spirituality. Likewise, many forms of spirituality do have some of the marks of religion. They have leaders, they have groups, they have fellowships, they have rules. So, yeah, there are spiritualities that, you know, are very individualistic and private, but just as many spiritualities occur in settings that could be religious if we wanted to put name onto them. Mm-hmm. In other words, they take place at a certain place at a certain time with someone leading something. So I think there's a lot of fluidity between those two terms, whereas oftentimes, especially in the media, and not just journalism, but all media, there seems to be a sharp division among them. I don't see the sharp division. I see the yin and yang.
So you're currently part of a USC-based project that has journalists profiling spiritual exemplars. Can you share more about that?
Yeah. The Spiritual Exemplar Project, which we also talked about as a spiritual engagement project, is terrific. Thanks to a grant from Templeton, the Center for Religion and Civic Culture at USC has been and will be doing research on spiritually engaged people. And their definition of spiritual engagement is people who are active in making the world a better place. So it's your faith convictions, whether they're specifically religious or spiritual or humanitarian, have motivated you to make a difference, whether it's feeding hungry people or doing disaster relief or working against climate change or working for, you know, political change. So we're not looking at people who are meditating or praying constantly, though, of course, those are spiritual engaged activities. The focus of the research is people who are doing activities in the world that help others or help the earth.
What role have you seen that spirituality plays in helping to create social transformation?
Well, the idea is that people who are interested in social transformation are usually motivated by a vision which is somewhat contradictory to what many people in contemporary American society think about. So in other words, whereas many people may be part of a rat race to get ahead or to have more or to buy or to, you know, see how many toys they can accumulate, people who are transformed feel like they're part of a different kind of vision, which is about how do we live together? How do we save the earth? How do we care for our neighbors? I mean, it's a vision or a sense of what the world is beyond one's own skin is the first start to seeing the potential for social transformation through spiritual religious visions. Does that answer your question?
It does. And I'm wondering, how have you seen, or how do you think this engaged spirituality, how does it keep people going when there's so many challenges in humanitarian work?
I think spirituality, the belief in something beyond oneself, whether it's a higher power or just the strength of one's community, can help one keep going even when one confronts failure. So oftentimes people working for change could say, well, today this didn't happen, or this week this didn't happen, or why can't things get better quicker? And without something to hold on to, it's hard to sustain oneself. You know, we're society looking for quick answers and quick fixes. So it's often doubly hard for at least Westerners or Americans to find sustenance if they don't see a payoff. And what spirituality, religion, humanism does is say there's a payoff, but the payoff may not always be visible to us. It may not often seem tangible. It may be in the long run. There will be a payoff. And my small contribution is helping to make it happen.
Did you know the Salvation Army served more than 23 million Americans last year fighting hunger, homelessness, substance abuse, and more, all in a fight for good? See what's happening in your neighborhood at westernusa.salvationarmy.org. That's westernusa.salvationarmy.org.
So this project is profiling all different spiritual exemplars from around the world. Can you give an example of someone that you'll be profiling?
I'm still working on who I'm profiling. There's a number of people who look really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. One is a Salvation Army leader who's done a lot of work on politics in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Another is a Buddhist who's been working on issues around prevention of the spread of nuclear, not only nuclear weapons, but, you know, nuclear energy. I've been looking at some folks in the U.S. who've been trying to change hearts and minds around LGBT issues. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm going to do 5 people, and they can be anywhere in the world. So trying to decide who to focus on and what to focus on has been a challenging experience, but also an exciting one.
Great. So many different people and passions. Sounds exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. And I really wanted to get in someone from the Salvation Army because from my own studies of the organization or the denomination, it seems to me like just joining the Salvation Army should qualify you as a spiritual exemplar because the work they do and the way they do it and the commitments they make, I mean, that is the heart of what I've been thinking about in terms of spiritual engagement. It is just believing that what you're doing will have an impact, even if you can't see it in your life, and you are sustained by your colleagues, but also by your belief. And so it seemed to me incredibly important to add someone from the Army to that mix.
I love that. So that leads us to the next bit of writing that you have done. You've authored a number of books, and one of those was on the Salvation Army. It was titled Red Hot and Righteous, The Urban Religion of the Salvation Army. What led you to that book, and what did you learn about the Salvation Army along the way?
Well, you're going to laugh, but what led me to that book was Salvation Army headquarters in New York on 14th Street, which was a beautiful Art Deco building. And I would pass that building all the time and wonder, what's that? What is that all about? Because I was familiar with the Army because I'd seen it on the street. But, you know, it becomes part of the urban landscape. There are mm-hmm. bell ringers at Christmas time, and you don't really think about, you know, what are they about or what are they doing? But I was in a PhD program, and I was figuring out what to do my thesis on, and I walked into the building, and I began, you know, looking at literature and asking questions, and it occurred to me that here was an incredibly interesting group that nobody really knew about. Everyone knew of them, but very few people knew about them. Mm-hmm. And there had been some very good scholarship on the Army by Army historians, and I'm thinking particularly of Edward McKinley, and mm-hmm. also known. But there hadn't been any outside scholars up until that point who were writing about the Army. So it seemed to me like a very great opportunity to go in and study an American icon that that was hidden in plain sight.
And what did you learn about the organization when you did that?
I learned so much about the Army. I mean, its history is so fabulous. The way, you know, the way William and Catherine and Booth worked together in a partnership, the way she challenged conventional norms by preaching and believing that women could preach, the way the two of them saw the world and saw that they had a mission and could make changes, but also, you know, how the Army itself, when it began, was such an exciting crusade and how young people flocked to it. And it was utterly countercultural, which is somewhat contrary. I mean, now we think of the Army as a relatively staid institution that's been ringing bells forever. But when it began, and people were shocked to see women in leadership roles and people standing on the street with making music with brass bands. So I learned that there was a lot more to the Army than I knew. But I also learned that there was this Christianity where people walked the talk. When I was reporting on religion, which was before I this book on the Army, there was always, I was in the South, and there was always like, you know, saying, do you walk the walk? Do you talk the talk? Do you talk the talk but not walk the walk? And that to many Southerners was like, you know, a way of describing how truly religious someone was. Folks in the Army walked the talk. And that's what got to me, that every time someone made a commitment to the Army, they were basically saying, I'm going to live as Jesus would want me to live, which is to follow Matthew 25. And I mean, I get shivers when I say it to you now, Kristen, because so many people say they're Christian. And yet, you know, I really do think that this is how committed Christians live, by doing what people in the Army do. I guess not everybody wants to, you know, join up and wear a uniform and have some loss of control, as you must when you become an officer. And yet the paradigm they've set should be more of an exemplar for more people, I think, because it's so inspirational. I'm not saying the Army is perfect. I'm not saying there haven't been issues over the years. Mm-hmm. I'm not blind to, you know, stories of, you know, people only getting service in the past, people getting services only if they listen to sermons, or some of the problems that there have been over the years with GLBT. Issues. Nothing's perfect in this world. Yet the Army does a really good job of trying to live a Christian witness.
That's a big compliment.
Yeah. or an insult to all the rest of the Christians.
Perspective. So as somebody who has spent years studying religion and the way it shows up in our culture, what would you want people to understand about religion, to embrace about religion? And if you could have your way and have everybody understand it, what would that be?
You know, religion can be, it's a two-edged sword. It can be a force for great good, and it can be a force for great evil. And oftentimes in the contemporary world, we see it as a force for evil, because in its name, people, you know, kill, murder, they do horrible things, lie to us. So I don't think religion is unqualified. I wouldn't want people to think that I'm saying everybody should know about religion because it's going to change your life and make it wonderful. As someone who is interested in religion as part of our society, I have trouble with people who think religion is not important or it's going away. I don't think it's unimportant, and I don't think it's going away. It may change. It may look different. Religion is about belief and belonging, and in human nature, to believe in something other than oneself. I think that's healthy, actually. And whether you believe in power of money or the power of God or the power of nature, it's important to realize that there are things beyond our own consciousness and our own bodies that are important in the world and can give meaning. Believing in nature is preferable to believing in money, but, you know, that's me. So I guess I'd want people to understand that even if there are flips in mainline Protestant and even evangelical Protestantism, other things will come up that answer people's questions about the meaning of life. So it's one thing. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I think people need to know about religion because it is a social and political actor. It's hard to understand contemporary geopolitics if you don't know what Modi is doing with Hindu nationalism, or you don't know how religion is playing a part in, you know, Netanyahu's coalition, or if you don't know the religious basis for what's going on with the Uyghurs or the Rohingya. All of these instances are also political. Religion is tied into politics in all these cases. And if you don't want to credit religion with any reality or real power, then you're going to not really understand what's going on, because people's faith is motivating. Even if leaders may use it cynically, for a lot of people, they do things because they believe they are doing the right thing. So to be ignorant of religion seems like, you know, it's like not knowing Shakespeare, not say Shakespeare, but not knowing, you know, the basics of American civics and, you know, how Congress works. It's part of knowing your world.
Definitely. So I know you always have a book in progress. Can you share more about one that you're currently working on?
Yes, I've been working on this book a long time, and fortunately I've done other things as I go along. I'm hoping to finish this year is on Reagan, religion, and the news media. And my idea is that Reagan represented a big break from the past, say that between the end of World War II and the 70s, you know, the vision of become a better place, there's more for everybody, we can work together, I'm my brother's keeper, the vision behind the Great Society and the New Deal and the New Frontier was always this expansive democratic vision of a big government and social welfare. A lot of things happened in the 70s, and it looked like that vision was falling apart, and Reagan came in with a new vision. And the vision was pulled a lot from evangelical Christianity, though it appealed to a base much wider. But it was about personal responsibility. It was about American exceptionalism. It was about freedom. And that vision really changed the orientation of our country and was normalized and mainstreamed through the news media. So one thing I'm interested in is the irony that the quote-unquote liberal media actually disseminated a new, very conservative political vision. I'm interested in how the political vision of Reagan was wrapped up in spiritual, it's a little cynical on my end, that part of his political vision was much of his political vision was rooted in his religiosity and spirituality, and that made it palatable. Because I think if you're going to ask people to do things like not care about their neighbor's welfare, you need to tell them you're not greedy and selfish, but you're helping your neighbor actually by making him personally responsible. So sometimes you need to give people a vision of why they're doing something, especially if it doesn't sound really on the up and up. So the book is basically about how, you know, this new vision took hold and how Reagan made it possible.
It sounds interesting.
Yeah. That wasn't a short elevator speech, so I hope that was...
No, it gives us even more reason to want to read it.
I sure hope so.
Yes, definitely. Dr. Winston, thank you so much for being willing to share more about you and your work today.
Oh, Kristen, thanks so much. It was great to be on your program, and I look forward to getting together with you sometime in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening, and until next time, keep on doing good. We will talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Do Gooders podcast. Find the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at caringmagazine.org/podcast. And if you love the show, would you share it with a friend? We'll see you next time, Do Gooder.